Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 801. It's the 14th of June 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dominic White, CEO of Energizer Investments, ENGI, talks about their recent investment in microstorage. Plus, Andre Catania, CEO of Zenith Energy, ZEN, discusses their progress on their workover wells at their fields in Azerbaijan and also covers some other interesting aspects. Plus, I have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Blue Jay Mining, Georgian Mining Corporation, and Iron Ridge Resources. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about CAS minerals, tertiary minerals, and non-standard finance. Plus, today's suggested one of your watch lists is Webis Holdings. Ticker is Web, submitted by Alex. I'll go through the reasons why Alex thinks you should add those to your watch list. Just information, not intended as investment advice. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dominic White, CEO of Energizer Investments. That's ENGI ticker. Dominic, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Great to speak to you again.
Yeah, good to speak to you. And you had a release out yesterday, sort of the first investment since you've been CEO, which is quite exciting. I read through it and I thought, yes, very interesting. And we'll go into the details of this in a bit. But for people, you know, now listening and not sure what you do, can you explain what Energizer is all about, please, Dominic?
Yeah, very briefly, we're Energizer is an AIM-listed investment company. And our main strategic focus is investing in operating companies that have an underlying property portfolio. Something like, for example, a self-storage company, which we'll come to in a moment. Something like a service apartment company. So you have an operator on top and then the real estate below. And we like these things because you can grow revenue, grow value in a number of different ways for shareholders. For example, you can grow the revenue of your operator, which adds to the value. You can improve the multiplier of your operator. But you can, of course, also improve the value of the underlying real estate as well.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, let's go to yesterday's announcement, which was an investment in self-storage, or micro-self-storage, I should say. So what is, explain micro-self-storage, please, Dominic.
Yeah, micro-self-storage, it's a new area within the traditional self-storage sector. So it's a new format, which is much closer to its customers. So yeah. If we look at traditional self-storage, just to make sure people people understand what that is. It's definitely a fast-growing industry. It's basically an industry where the customers, they rent self-storage units and lockers within a much larger warehouses, and they'll store their personal items or possibly business items. And they tend to be really big facilities, 40,000 square foot, 50,000 square foot facilities, brands like Big Yellow, and they're on the edge of town. Towns. So in microcell storage, we're doing something which is different. We're looking at much smaller units, so 10,000, 20,000 square foot, up to maybe 30,000 square foot, but that would be really the top end. And they'd be in much denser urban areas. So you could find one, for example, pretty much in the centre of London and on the edge of smaller towns where there's much less or no competition from the larger operators. It could be in a basement, it could be a floor of an office building, it could be a standalone unit, but would tend to be much smaller than the competition. And we're seeing there's really a lot of demand from customers for really easily accessible, flexible storage solutions. And there's very limited supply of this in towns. You have to get in your car. You have to drive for 20 minutes to get to them. It's something like the gyms have done. There's a company called The Gym Group you may have heard of, very successful listed company. And they've got out and it put in basements, much smaller gyms, which are open 24 hours a day, very technology-driven, and very local to their customers, and compete with the bigger gyms like Virgin, who would tend to have gyms on the edge of towns, much bigger gyms on the edge of towns. And they've created a really successful business. They have 80 gyms in the UK now by being very local to their customers. And we're doing that type of business model within the self-storage sector, being very local with micro storage centres local to our customers.
Excellent. Okay, so explain the details of the deal, if you could, Dominic.
Yeah, absolutely. So the headline details are we are committed to investing £0.6 million, £600,000, which is enough to launch the platform, which is enough to fit out the first facility and get it stabilised. And by stabilised, I mean get it up to profitability and north and into profitability. And the strategy here is to open one. This is with any business that you want to scale, it's to open one, make it work, stabilize it, get the technology right, open another two or three, get them right, and then really roll it out. And we're looking to roll out the business, or the investment is looking to roll out 20 plus of these facilities over the next 3 to 5 years. So it's exactly what the Gym Group does, and I'm going back to them, and because they've been extremely successful in their business model, and it's exactly what you want to do when you're scaling up a business of multiple facilities. You scale success, and once you've got a few of them working, then you scale it very, very quickly.
Yes, so you get that one working, and like you say, and I suppose you're not just going to buy one because there's not enough money in that, is there? So you get, like you say, 20 or more facilities in the next 2 to 5 years.
Absolutely. And we look for it to happen fast. I mean, I'm only emphasising the point that you start small, because you start small and you get it right, you get it highly profitable, because these things are very cash generative. You get everything right around it, and then you grow it very very quickly. So it's a very exciting growth area, and we're really a first mover in it. There really isn't anyone out there doing this micro storage or focusing on this micro storage concept, and out there with the strategy of building a network of them.
Okay, and I mean, have you sort of found areas you're looking at yet? I mean, have you pinpointed the certain areas you're looking at? Do you think we're going to put one there or what?
Yeah, well, we're looking within, starting our focus within the M25 and really within the North Circular Road. So it's not going to be London centric, but it's starting being London centric because of the high levels of demand. And we are focused in on a couple of very high profile potential partners, so potential property partners who have whole portfolios of assets across London. It comes from my background in investment management, so I speak to all the fund managers I know who run central London funds and own billions of euros or pounds of real estate, and you can go out and pick some interesting sites which would work very well for this sector.
Yeah, okay, and I quite like the idea. I mean, you've got ambition there, 20 facilities or more, and I suppose once you get that scale, then you get other people sort of looking at you thinking, hang on, these guys are getting quite big here, which is quite interesting. So, first of all, who is sort of teaming up with you as an operator there, Dominic?
Well, coming in, running the business there, down there, is a guy called Paul Fahey. He's it's always essential to get the right people in the business. This is why we want to set this up and not buy one. So it makes sure we get the right people with the right technology. And technology is important in this area because we want to be able to keep the cost down, remote monitor them, and give customers all the best type of access and services you can get only when you're doing these types of things digitally. So Paul brings a whole number of years of experience of starting up, growing successfully networks, and then selling on profitable networks to sell storage businesses to larger companies like Big Yellow. He's built businesses and sold them onto Big Yellow. He's done that in the UK. He's done that internationally. He's also done spent a lot of time in the States. And in America, the American self-storage business is the most mature market in the world. It's many multiples of the size of the UK market. So he brings back technology and process from the States to our new business here, which will help us avoid some of those pitfalls that are inevitably out there when you're in business. We will be avoiding those and then focusing on the ways to get the thing growing quickly. He's also had some really profile roles in as president of some of the European and UK self storage associations. So he's really been in the sector and knows the way to do this stuff. So a really great partnership between capital, real estate contacts that we have, and operations contacts, fit out contacts, and marketing, what have you, that he brings specifically around the self storage sector.
Yeah, well, I read that. I thought that's good to get a guy there who knows exactly how it works. And like you said, it's almost got a proven model in America, haven't you? Like you said, it's quite big in America, so it's proven over there. Just bring it over here and proving it up here. And so go through the fundamental business side of it. How does it sort of make money, and what are the kind of margins you're looking at?
Yeah, so as I said, we're investing in smaller facilities, and a function of that, or part of that, is that it will allow us and enable us to get to higher occupancy levels quickly. Mm-hmm. An average occupancy level in the self-storage market is about 75%. If you look at Big Yellow, they're around 80%. We'll expect to be 80% and even more, because we have these smaller facilities in very high demand areas. Yeah. If you look at the very simple numbers in terms of, let's keep it simple and assume we rented out some space that we turned it into a facility, just to keep this easy. We could be paying around £8, £9, £10 a square foot to rent out a space if it's a basement somewhere that's not being used for other things. And we could be then renting that out or selling that space, the units of the space, onto our customers for around £40, £45 a square foot on average in London. London rates are much higher than the rest of the UK. Yeah. But there's a big amount of room in there for margin. Margins are really, really good in this sector. Again, I'll point back to, and I keep pointing back to Big Yellow, but you can see their results online. It's a listed company, so it's all public information. But they're good for, they're the biggest outfit out there in traditional self-storage, so good for putting numbers from. But their EBITDA margin, so their profit margin before interest, is way north of 50%, which is very high. I mean, a lot of businesses out there are at 20%, 30% yeah. margins. Obviously, supermarkets are much lower. They're a different beast. But it's a great sector for high EBITDA margins. We'll be pushing and aiming for way north of 50%, and we'll be doing that partly by managing things extremely efficiently back to the technology again, with technology, so we can have multiple units rolling out that network of 20 we've talked about across the UK, but with minimizing the amount of people we need in them through the use of central sales stations, central sales teams, remote monitoring of facilities, so people can go to self-storage facilities and still have contact with humans, but perhaps through screens because they're located in different central places. So use of technology, keeping costs down, and high margins and high occupancy levels are absolutely the things we're looking for, and the reason we've invested in this sector, or this part of the traditional self-storage sector.
Yeah, okay. And well, you're only a 2.5 million market cap, so you know, if you do something, make some positive moves here, it can sort of re-rate. But where do you see yourself, the upside here, the big upside?
Well, the big upside is definitely in, as you said before, it's not in doing one, although these types of things you can do in a small scale very extremely profitably. They throw off a lot of cash, as you would have gathered from that, the EBITDA margins I was mentioning. But it's really about growing the network. It's really about getting a scale, because the rating you would get, the multiplier, valuation multiplier you get on a portfolio of these, 10, 15, 20, 30 of these facilities, will be much higher than the multiple you would get on just one of them. So it's all about growing the network. It's about, if we look at the story of the Gym Group, I mentioned them earlier, again, listed company, the information's out there, but they've had a very, very successful growth journey from 1 to 3 to 10 to, I think, 88 units now. Yeah. Across the UK. And it's exactly that type of growth model that we want to pursue. And in growing up that growth curve, you clearly get operational efficiencies, so you get better EBITDA margins, and also you get better multiples on your EBITDA, so better valuation multipliers, so higher values, which is all good for shareholders. So valuation all feeds back directly back into the net assets of Energizer and hopefully the share price.
Marvellous. Okay, Dominic, well, anyone listening who likes the sound of this and what you're going to be doing, but they're not following you on Vox, can you give them sort of three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got a great team. We've got a history of raising capital and growing businesses, growing listed businesses, and we're all financially aligned with all shareholders, is the first point. So secondly, we're now executing our strategy. So we've made our first investment in an operating company, and we are looking at making more investments in other real estate operating businesses. So we're on the journey. Last time when we spoke, we were saying we're at the start of our journey. Well, we've taken our first step. We're now into a business. We're on the journey now, and we're very excited about the future.
Excellent stuff. Dominic, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future when you have some more news out.
Definitely. Look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andre Cattaneo, CEO of Zenith Energy, Z-E-N ticker. Andre, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me, and I'm phoning you from Huracán D, our field base of the three fields we have, Murat Candid, Jafali and Zardab in Azerbaijan, in Republic of Azerbaijan.
Okay, so you're in Azerbaijan this time. I know we've spoken to each other around the world. You've been everywhere, from China to London to Azerbaijan. So you're in Azerbaijan, in the field there. So I know everything's cracking on there, and we'll talk about how the workover is going, etc. First of all, just give us a brief summary, if you could, for people new to the podcast or not aware of what your company does. Can you explain what it does, please, Andrea?
Absolutely. You have started saying that you've talked with me from various locations, and in a way that it doesn't seem that we are permanent travelers, but we are very much believing in three factors: fair and technological exhibition around the world, in Russia, in China, in the United States, where you find a lot of new technologies, and cheaply in one visit you make already all the content that you will take many months to do if it was in a separate part of the world, in each office of the supplier. We are a specialized producer of oil and gas. We take fields that are underdeveloped and maybe in oblivion, and we bring there new technologies, Canadian know-how, USA know-how, and with that we improve production. And in return, we have a great asset, which they have huge reserves. So this is the case in our field in Azerbaijan, which is the largest field onshore in Azerbaijan, is 642 square kilometers. And our 2P reserve value, undiscounted, is $2 billion, American dollars. And our market capitalization is between 9 and 10 million pounds.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So people can see the disjoint there between the value and the MPV. Like I said, massive fields in Azerbaijan. And so let's go into the detail of this now, if you could, Andrea. So I know you've been doing workovers. And how is the workover plan going so far? Where are you at? Where are you going next?
Well, we started very slow. And the reason has been that we have used some very cheap equipment, but has been disappointed in its performances. So as we are making profit, as you know, every day, and so we have the ability to spend, we have increased the level of our equipment. We have rented two new workover rigs, which are modern in respect of the older one. So we are speeding very much the time of completion of each workover plan for each well that we attack. So we started with M195 that has been successfully finished 7 days ago, and then we have to communicate next week the daily flow of crude oil, dried crude oil that we will put in sales. This would be an important achievement. It's the first well next week brought to the complete end, knowing the daily rate. But we found a very good pay zone. The public has been informed last week that we had a pay zone of 8 meters, and this is a brilliant result. And having made a sidetrack, we found a portion of the reservoir that has full integrity and has not been disturbed by previous years of operation. And so we are looking very much to see good results, especially because we will put a pump produced by Schlumberger. And the second well that will come producing results in the next few days is M45. Was apparently a simple job of fishing, but then again, because of the previously used antiquated rig, became lengthy, and so we are making the process now with a new Chinese rig, and this will permit to have the results in a matter of days. And then after that, we are starting in Zardab. That is a very interesting field, the less developed of the three, and where there is huge potential production, but with some treatment problems that in the 80s, when this field was initially discovered, were very complicated for the local operator, but now are in Canada and USA, very easily managed by new techniques that are, I would say, today standard, not revolutionary anymore, after 10, 15 years of full utilization, especially in Canada. And then we are going on like that, maintaining our target to have the 1,000 barrels by the 31st of March 2018. You know, we have been slow in our takeoff, but this is normal. The arrival of the new CEO, Mike Palmer, which is a man with a great experience around the globe, but specifically a great success story in a previous operator in Azerbaijan for 9 years. And so now Mike is bringing a variety of people around the globe that worked with him before, and they are in good tune with him and very competent. And so we will have a strong team to make increase of production to the 1,000 barrels that we still maintain as a realistic target for the 31st of March 2018.
Excellent stuff. And so, do you mind me asking, how much are you sort of producing at the moment, Andre? Do you know that?
Yes, we have in production in excess of 300, mm-hmm. and we will know the exact number next week of our increased production by the M195. So we are, if we have the two well, 195 and 45, in production, in full production and steady flow by the end of June, we will be able to report a very nice increase.
Okay, all right.
And so that is really our point. And the fact, you know, the stock price has declined in the last 20 days. There has been a variety of sales. And then, of course, people are very much disappointed by the delay in the completion of the first two workovers. To this shareholder, I should say simply that, you know, no engine turn at full speed in the early hours, and we have needed some sort of tuning period, and the arrival of the CEO is making a great help. And we can even do better, in theory, than the original plan, because not only we have the workover, but we have various oil recovery enhancement technique, the water flooding of certain wells, and then various chemical treatment, chemical fracturing, and in a way that we can enhance the production of all the wells. In addition, you know that we have 11 wells that are pumped of the 60 in production, and these wells that are pumped will be serviced by a different quality of wells. We have signed a contract with Schlumberger, and so that would permit to have much better technology, and this is another way in which we will increase production. So I think that by the 30th of June, when we will announce our yearly results, that under our corporate calendar and Canadian law will be at the end of this month, there will be as well a complete picture of the techniques that we will employ in the next 9 months to reach the 1,000 barrels.
Okay, excellent. And at the moment, do you know what and how many future wells and which ones you intend to work over?
Yes. We have the intention to focus as priority in the three well in Zardab that they were producing a large amount of oil for the first 15 days. And then after that, they have been forced to stop for the plugging of the sand coming into the antiquated filter. And so we are planning to make the workover of these three Zardab well first, because this is where there is the biggest jump in production that we can show to our investors. So in an industrial plan, it's not really too important what comes first, but in a capital market reading by the investors, of course, it's very important if we do now the easier ones and we bring our production in excess of 500, rather than making the more complicated ones first.
Excellent. Okay, listen, there has been some rumours of an acquisition. I understand you can't reveal any details here. It has to be revealed in an RNS, but is there any light you can shed on this, André?
Well, thank you for understanding that I cannot make any information except by RNS in our acquisition campaign. Our company is always as philosophy cooking some acquisition at any one time, because we want to grow the company as well by acquisition and not only by organic industrial development. And indeed, we are trying to close a transaction, and now that the arrival of the CEO permits me to unload the variety of daily responsibility in the field, and so I can do my CEO job in full rather than part-time, I have the possibility to focus in the conclusion of some of the files that we had on hold for the development in our field and the IPO in London. So I hope that we'll be able to report in the next 30 days some closure of these things. You know that to make tango, you need to be two. So we hope that as well the vendor will be as looking forward as we are. But if that's the case, we will announce a very interesting acquisition in the next 30 days.
Marvellous. Okay, thanks for that, Andreas. And like always, if someone likes the sound of what you're doing there, but they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
I think that I would, if I would be a private investor, invest in Zenith for three main reasons. The first is that we have a huge reserve base. The oil is there, visibly is there, has been produced before the field went in oblivion, and we are speaking about the thousands of barrels. And we have started a very low-risk campaign of first workover and then drilling, and then maybe there are some delays, which is normal in industrial activity, but then the base of the success are totally there and confirmed. There is oil, there is technology, and there is a low-cost attitude, which permits not to risk our neck in any capex activity we do, because we are just using profits. So we are not exposing shareholders to any roulette type of activity. This, I think, for an investor in oil is extremely attractive, because you know that a lot of companies, they make speculative capex operation that, if successful, they are bringing a good result, but if unsuccessful, they may kill the company. And we should remember that oil activity is one of the activity against all the odds. So there are more probability to fail than probability to win. So our situation is extremely special, in which we have the low risk operation, because the oil is there. It's not to be discovered. It's not to be risky discovered or found. It's there. It's just a question to pump it up by various technologies. So that is the first point. The second point is the fact that we are a low-cost operator. Our oil will cost, in a few months, when we have increased production to 500 barrels, $10 per barrel. You know that there are a lot of articles and journalistic debate and scholars about the oil price going up or going down. But then a result of it, empirically, you can see that it will stay between $45 and $50 without spending too much time to debate this. There is a glut of supply, and that creates maybe the impossibility to return to the $70 to $80 per barrel. Ourselves, having such a low cost of production, we are very profitable despite any future inflection on the price of oil. And the third is that we are a very committed team, with the board of directors having large stake in the company. We have now gained the integration with the team under Mike Palmer that has been very successful in his history. And so then as a consequence, being believing that the major strength of a company is human resources, I will invest money as well for that important reason in talent.
Excellent, Andrea. Thanks as always. And like I said, you're doing lots of work there. You're very busy there in Azerbaijan, not only in Azerbaijan, but in other areas as well. So no doubt we'll speak again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you to you. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. It's John Mayer. John, thanks for coming on.
Hi, it's good to be here again. Thank you.
Okay, John, what are you looking at? What's what's been checking out some news this week, and what's interesting there?
Well, the mining companies are moving ahead, generally doing relatively well in the current environment. We managed a placing for Blue Jay. We placed existing stock for Western Areas, who were a big shareholder and founder investor in the company. But there was so much demand that that we persuaded the company to issue some new shares. They didn't need to raise new money at the time, but they didn't want to leave investors hanging too much. And the management also chipped in a bit of stock. It was a sensible time to do that. But even with all of that going on, many investors were left sort of unsatisfied in terms of the demand that they put in for. Certain institutions were saying that they wanted fill or kill orders. They did back down a little bit, but it was an institutional raising, and that's why they were coming in. And but the fact is that it shows that there is great demand for Blue Jay as a company. And that there is that people are convinced that this is a project that is going ahead.
Yeah. And where are we now? It's about north of 100 million market cap. But like we said, just go over the details of this, because it's is it the biggest or the highest grade ilmenite in the world, and also one of the biggest, isn't it?
Well, the company's been looking at this idea of it being the highest grade ilmenite in the world. That's what the consultants have told them, and now that they've published that on a number of occasions, nobody seems to have challenged that idea that they are the highest grade. So we can only assume that they probably are.
Yeah.
There are other high grade ilmenite projects around, but this seems to be the simplest one. I mean, it is in Greenland, which is a cold place for most of the year. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking to the company about the technicalities of how are they going to start mining this. They've said to the market that they want to start mining this next year. And what they said to me is that they want to start off with 100,000 tons of product to sell maybe next year, which is more than just a bit of a trial mining thing. It's sort of going into, shall we say, a first stage of production. They can easily get this will be dredge mined. Mm-hmm. There's a natural bay. They can just drive a dredge up from Holland or somewhere, put it into the bay, start dredging. Then they have to process that material. And I've been talking to them about the processing plant, and they say, well, look, we can take in a plant that's skid mounted, don't need to concrete in the foundations or anything like that, which could be tricky in Greenland because it is too cold for concrete most of the time. There are houses in the area, so they're I think most of them are most if not all of them are empty, so there is a sort of natural camp there as well, and I think things can get going really quite quickly. So the company sound reasonably confident about their ability to get up and running fairly fast. I think the next news for us is to wait for a bit more on the drilling, a bit more on the resource, the extending the resource, and then really for confirmation of the bulk sample extraction, and if somebody's going to sign an agreement to take 50 or 100,000 tons of material for processing, for further processing next year. Those are critical things to watch out for. And those are things that can add materially to the value of the company.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, and anything else you're looking at there, John?
Well, look, I'm still a huge fan of Georgian mining. I think it's you know, normally mining is not for widows and orphans, but when you look at Georgian mining, it's such an obvious company from a geological perspective, you can see they're going to start mining the gold cap to start with. It's fairly low grade and not something you get too excited about. But there's a lot of copper sitting underneath this, and there's enough drilling to see where it is. There's some very high grade copper. I think most of it will be more normal grade, but the indications are more normal to good. And I think this is the value of Georgian mining is going to grow and grow and grow. And I feel very sure about that one.
Marvellous. And anything else at all, or is that it for the week?
Iron Ridge came out with some news today about their lithium project in Ghana. I think that's looking very interesting. They really have developed a whole portfolio of projects around Africa. They've got gold, some very exciting gold projects in Chad, not a country that I know anyone else having gone into before. They've picked up some really interesting ground in Ivory Coast, along a shear zone that runs down from Burkina Faso, which hosts a number of quite large gold resources. And they've got this lithium project in Ghana, which has sensible grades and is something that could be brought forward fairly quickly. And I think in the lithium space, so long as you've got a good grade of spodumene lithium in hard rock, I think you should be able to get an offtake contract from the Chinese and get some money in. And I think that's the way to go. I know there's a lot of noise about things going on in Chile with lithium brines. Those things are much higher capex, fraught with more political issues, and I think that some of the, you know, there may be one or two winners in that area, mm-hmm. but I think there's going to be more winners in the hard rock, slightly higher cost, but lower capex to get into. And I think that's why I'm still interested in these things like Kodal Minerals, Iron Ridge, and even Bushveld, I think, are going to have some, because they've got a tin project in Namibia which appears to have some lithium with it as well. So those things, I think, should, you know, they've all got a better chance of getting going.
Yeah, lovely stuff. Marvellous. So that's Blue Jay Mining and a bit of Georgian there and a bit of Iron Ridge Resources, IIR ticker. John, thanks very much, and speak next week, fella.
Thank you, Justin. See you soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
Yes. Morning, Justin. I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, it's not too bad. So it's warming up a bit down here. Don't know what it's like with you. The weather is right there.
It's absolutely beautiful. I'm looking out of the window here across to the golf course in Seaford Head, and it's just blue sky, not a cloud in the sky. Actually, no, one tiny white cloud. So there you go.
Okay. Well, he's a loner there. So that's fine. Nice to hear. But apparently it's going to be hot this week and then rubbish next week. But there we are. That's a summer for you, isn't it? And obviously it'll tip down for Wimbledon.
Well, of course it will. Yeah, I mean, that's tradition. It has to tip down for Wimbledon, and they have to sort of cram all the matches into the remaining days and maybe squeeze the finals, both finals, in on the Sunday. But, you know, that's what we expect, isn't it? And then, of course, there's Glastonbury coming up, and doubtless there'll be seas of mud there and people wading through mud to see their favourite bands.
Yeah, what's the point of that? Right, anyway, exactly. I mean, call me old, but I don't see the point. Let's
been
crack
there,
on.
That, done it.
Yeah, but I haven't. I don't want to. I just like to be, you know, have access to a decent toilet. That's all I want in life.
Absolutely.
It's not a big ask in this world, in this country, in the first
and a
world country. Yeah, you know, being able to access decent water and toilets, and you can't do that at the festival. Why do we want to replicate like a third world scenario? I don't understand that, with loud music and other people here. It's ridiculous. Anyway, okay, let's look at the stocks. What are you looking at, Al?
Okay, I've got a couple of topics for you, Just. Firstly, I want to look at Kaz Minerals, KAZ.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kaz, of course, has been known as Kazakhmys in the past, and it's brief summary of the company. It's primarily involved in mining and copper in Kazakhstan. It's got five projects, East Region, Buz, Shackle, and Aktogay. It's mining and copper in Kazakhstan. Buzimchek is gold in Kyrgyzstan, and it's got mining projects and metal processing, which is metals and processing also in Kazakhstan. Now, the company announced a quarter one production update back in March. The quarter one production copper was production was up 16% to 52 kt. The company says on track to, for full year guidance, and the company's more recently renewed and increased its finance facilities. It now has a pre-export finance loan facility of $600 million. There have also been some board changes recently too. Andrew Southam has been along with the company, and he's moving up to be CEO. Oleg Novichok, the current CEO, is moving to be chairman, with Michael Lynch-Bell also moving up to be deputy chairman. What's interesting, though, about the company at its current point is that it's had a very strong run or had a very strong run up to the results, and then it's very much traded sideways since that, since hitting 6p in February. And it's tested the 50-day moving average. It was trading between the 200 and the 50-day during March and April, and then this month successfully tested twice the 50-day moving average, and it's bounced higher. And that could well be, well, it's a number of reasons. Firstly, there's the copper price looks as though it's set for an increase, and obviously that's going to be good news for the metals producers, reflected in the cost of other miners too, and obviously, one of the key attractions for people investing in Kaz Minerals is that it's well known as one of the world's lowest cost copper producers, and that's even compared to Antofagasta, which of course is a big copper specialist down in Chile. Also, this month there have been a raft of broker upgrades too. Peel Hunt has issued a buy note with 600p price target. JP Morgan overweight, upgraded to overweight and a 665p price target. Credit Suisse also has an outperform rating, raised its price target to 630p, and Macquarie is outperform with a 670p price target too. So where the, on a technical level, we've seen a test resistance and move higher from that. You've got a rising copper price to back it, and you've got broker support. So I think there's a very strong buy case for this stock to at least push back to 600p and probably higher.
Marvellous stuff. All right, that's Kaz. Anything else that you're looking at, Alf?
Yes, sticking with mining, and again looking for global trends and improvements in the prices of raw commodities, we move to fluorspar. Now, fluorspar is one of those essential raw materials that you've probably never heard of, but it's used in smelting, it's used in glass production, it's used in a whole range of processes, and it's classed as a critical raw mineral. In other words, if it were unavailable, the price would skyrocket, and obviously the companies involved in that would do very well. Now, I'm looking at the UK's only listed fluorspar company, which is a company called Tertiary Minerals. Epicode is TYM.
Yep.
Now, tertiary, if you look at the chart, it's drifted downwards for over the past year. It's been as high as 1.5p, it's as low as 0.06p, and it's currently trading at 0.065p. Got a market cap of just 2 million, which is astonishing when you consider the projects it's involved in. It owns the Storuman project in Sweden, which has a massive resource of copper there, fluorspar underground there. The company, that there are issues with the Swedish government in regard to permits for reindeer farming in the area, and the government is currently working through the government to find a way to resolve that. It has the Lattidalen project in Norway. And it has the MB fluorspar project in Nevada. Now, brokers have looked at the company. Beaufort have a speculative buy and a 9p price target for the company. SB Angel have a buy rating and a 10.6p price target for the company. The general assessment between the two brokers is the sum of the parts value is just under £20 million. So the company is currently trading at a tenth of that, down at £2 million. So really, there's an awful lot of upside. And what was particularly interesting about a month ago, there was a note published on the tertiary feed about the Canadian government, which had invested $5 million into a Canada fluorspar project to reactivate the St. Lawrence mine and bring employment and generally reinvigorate the town of St. Lawrence. And that move obviously underscores the expected future value and demand for fluorspar. And tertiary really is probably one of the best companies and most undervalued companies in the world at the moment that you could actually move into to take advantage of that. It's not going to happen overnight, but there are a lot of things happening in the company at the moment. The MD, Richard Clemmie, has said the company is also seeking other projects which are cash generative in the shorter term. So the company could... We could see a significant transformation in the company probably by the end of the year, if not sooner. And certainly any movement in the fluorspar price, which looks likely to happen given the data that's out there at the moment, is going to support the move upwards in the tertiary minerals share price.
Marvellous. Okay, TYM is the ticker there. And anything else on your watch list there, Al?
Yes, indeed. My colleague Dr. David Paul at VectorVest highlighted this stock yesterday, and I think it's well worth a look. Non-standard finance. The epicode is NSF. Yeah. This company, it's listed in 2015, and it provides non-standard consumer finance, as the name would imply. It has a number of divisions, loans at home, everyday loans, and trust too, which provides credit to people that have difficulty obtaining credit, hence the term, again, non-standard finance. And obviously, that represents a significant opportunity in the marketplace, and they reckon there's probably about 15 to 20 million people in the UK who fall into that category. The company announced results in March. It revealed its normalized revenues, including part contributions from acquisitions over the year, of $81 million, up from $14.5 million in 2015, and moved into a profit of just under $14 million from a £500,000 loss the previous year. Company said that growth was strong. It paid a final dividend on the year, maiden dividend of 1.2p over the year. Trading update again in May, the company said that the trading performance since the results had been in line and moved forward. What was also interesting that Dr. David Paul said that at the time of the year results in March, it triggered a number of metrics on the VectorVest VectorVest interface that indicated that there was great value in the company. The earnings growth rate metric logged at 47%, excellent again, and the master indicator, which is across a number of indicators, rated the company very highly, with the current value on the stock of 1.16p versus the current 70p where it's trading. The company's made the acquisitions, it's bought those acquisitions in-house. Clearly good progress is being made, and in the world we live today, it's difficult for a lot of people to get credit, and clearly the company sees a big opportunity in the marketplace, so there's great potential in the company going forward.
Marvellous. Three stocks there then. So we've got CAS, TYM, CAS, and non-standard finance.
NSF.
Sounds sexy, that name, doesn't it? I suppose it does what it says in the tin, but, you know, I think it comes up with something a bit sexier, you know?
As we said, it does what it says on the tin. It provides, you know, people that maybe can't walk into a bank off the high street and get the finance that they need. You know, it's an understanding of finance. So it could be more imaginative, I agree. But I suppose the actual trading names, you know, loans at home, everyday loans, you know, it's probably a bit more imaginative. But if it's working.
Yeah, exactly. Lovely. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Cheers, Al. Thanks for that. Speak next week, fella.
Thanks, Lord Just. All the best. Speak next week.
Okay, today's suggested one for your watch list is Webis Holdings. That's WEB, submitted by Alex. What does the company do? Webis Holdings is a holding company with subsidiaries operating in the gaming and technology sectors. It operates a totalizer wagering hub through its United States tote supplier, which enables it to conduct advanced deposit wagering by passing wagers directly into global racetrack betting pools in real time. I sort of understand it. Just betting, really, isn't it, really? W&W holds simulcast agreements to transact wagers with a large number of racetracks globally located in the US, Canada, UK, Ireland, Australia, France, and several other jurisdictions. And the website supplied is webisholdingsplc.com. What's the current price? Share price, 1.45 pence. Market cap, 5.7 million. By the way, that was share price, 1.45 pence. I was just muttering there, mumbling. Shares in issue, 393 million. Okay, what revenue and profit or loss does the company generate? This is for the 6 months ended the 30th November 2016. So, revenue. Group revenue increased by 118% to $148 million. It was $67 million last year, with group gross profit increasing by 44.8% to $2.07 million. So obviously low margin here, but the loss before income tax of $215,000. How much cash or debt does the company have? Total cash balances stand at $10.74 million. Year ended 31st of May. But obviously, check out the debt there. It's not mentioned. There's three reasons why someone should add them to their watch list. Reason one, Burn Bray Limited owns 248 million shares, or 63%, which Jim Mellon is CEO of. Reason two, the number of shares that are available on AIM market are 393,000, or 393 million, and which means 75% of the company's shares are not in public hands. This means there are a tight number of free float shares available. Yes, agreed there. Reason three, the company turnover increased by 118.2%. Once the debt is paid off, shareholders should have some serious growth potential. And just looking at debt, you're trying to find it. Talk amongst yourselves. Okay, so listen, it's worth checking out whether they have any loans. I can see quickly on the balance sheet here, or on the statements, as a result, we secured a term loan of $500,000 on the 24th of February from our major majority shareholder in support of further license acquisition. This loan carries a coupon of 7.75% for a term of 5 years and is secured against the unencumbered assets of Webis. Together with the proceeds of the new loan, Webis now holds approximately $2.5 million of its own cash held for security deposits. So that's all I can see there. So check that out. That's it for. So if you like Webis, by all means, its ticker is Web. Do the research and add them to your website. Thanks for your watch list. Alex, thanks very much for submitting that. Much appreciated. Okay, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at five, Sirius Petroleum, SRSP. At four, URU Metals, URU ticker there. At three, Mosman Oil and Gas, MSMN. At two, N4 Pharma, N4P. And the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is Great Western Mining Corporation. I think 2 days on a trot now. GWMO is ticker. All right, top five most liked RSS on Vox Markets last 24 hours. At five, Metal Tiger, Talon receipt of Chemco Competent Persons Report, Final Draft, Mineral Resource Estimate and Valuation Update. At four, Motif Bio, MTFB presentation at Bio International Convention. At three, Sound Energy, SOU, update on Badil. At two, URU Metals, board changes. At one, also URU Metals, Zebedila project update, where they announced they'd drilled a hole there. But Well, we'll see where it goes. We'll see where it goes. You are you metals, and do your research. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.